and also quotes for the procurement of the finished and fittings that were damaged. Yes. And also we needed a breakdown on the application of funds, including your salaries, your rent, and your services from the municipality. The process was actually driven as follows. Applicated to the
email address, BRP at CIFA. Fund inquiries were also actually directed to our hotline, the 0860 number, and the info at DSPD email address. Upon the receipt of the applications, they were reviewed and completed. The applications were subjected to due diligence process for approval by the CIFA. And the follow-ups were made by CIDA with small enterprises that actually had incomplete applications. And also those enterprises that required non-financial support were also referred to our sister agency, CIDA, for further handling. The budget implications. Total budget for the program was about 300 million, and this was also secured through the reallocation of funds from the business viability scheme budget of 2021-2022. And the remaining budget of BVP was going to be used for the existing pipeline of BVP applications. So we didn't take the entire budget. The target, given the budget that was set aside, was to assist about 150 SMEs, predominantly in KZN and Gauteng. There were challenges, Chair, with regards to the incomplete applications. And those challenges were as follows. I'm trying to move this. Thank you. The challenges were actually common to the ones that we experienced during the COVID relief fund, which was implemented from April to July 2020, and also the business recovery program that was implemented after December 2021. And the nature was as follows. Some were not able to produce the affidavit or police statement or case number, which actually made us suspect that some of them were fraudulent, because really there is a police station near every other next community. We should be able to get an affidavit or police statement. And I remember some of them saying, this thing of police affidavit, yeah, Bambi. And we say, look, if you are genuine, why should you be worried about being arrested? And also some were unable to provide evidence of looting. Those that were formal couldn't produce financial statements or bank statements or management accounts. They could not generate cash flow projections. Those that said their properties were damaged or the properties that were rentership, like title deed, and also no quotations to justify the funding requirements. For example, a person will say, I need 1.8 million, and okay, fine, provide us with quotations of the equipment that you want to buy that money. That couldn't come. And the formal ones, some of them could not produce SARS compliance certificates. In some instances, applications could be approved without these requirements, and we will put it as a condition precedent. But even after an extended period of time to wait for these entities to come back with these documents, it just didn't happen. One of the lessons that we learned, Chair and members, during this process was that we need some form of formalization for our enterprises to facilitate easy government interventions in times of crisis, and also for other targeted business support programs that government may wish to implement. Incomplete applications, solutions. The incomplete applications were first and foremost referred to CIDA for assistance for matters like preparation of financial statements, cash flows, preparation and submission of necessary documents in order to be SARS compliant. For CIFA, we had to go an extra mile and also assist in the packaging and finalization of incomplete applications. After that, we get them processed. Naturally, this is neither ideal nor desirable, as it is constraining the already constrained CIFA resources that ought to be focusing on processing complete and fundable open applications. A large amount of the approved applications under the BRP have
the entire time. The asking box was 785 applications, and amounts were about 657 million. And the applications that were actually that were referred to the regional office for the tune of about 13.7 million. The deals that we approved as an outcome of this process, approvals were 54 million for 55 enterprises. Counting South, the approvals were 39 enterprises. KwaZulu-Natal, 156 million for 168 applications. The total applications that were processed were 250 million for 264 entities. And then looking at the jobs maintained.
Counting North, 662 jobs, Gauteng South, 466 jobs, KwaZulu-Natal, 2,536 jobs. The total jobs that were actually maintained were 3,664. The program chair and members was closed for the new applications on the 30th of September 2021. And the volume of applications
concluding the RP formal sector and the formal sector, because the member chair and members speak formal and informal sector. The program is stated the Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal team process the deal pipeline received, working closely with CEDA. The applications proved to be a big challenge to process. Two of them were incomplete and unprocessable. The majority of applications processed have been a function really that was driven by our Gautengs to actually shorten the turnaround times. This has also actually highlighted the levels of formalization and compliance readiness of township and rural enterprises. As stated earlier on, we need to really find a way in the portfolio of formalizing these businesses so that government is able to quickly respond to their needs. And the BRP program committed 250 million versus the 300 million budget that will. And it's clear those filters to quickly to the formal traders. The support for informal traders through was done also through the business association, because a majority of them are not registered anyway. So the only way that we could actually verify their authenticity for audit purposes, we had to use their associations and the municipalities. And mainly we focused on the provision of financial and non-financial support to the sector, and they also encouraged to be willing to participate in business development services that were provided by CEDA. And they did not actually be registered for CIPC and SARS. They were informal. The scheme was implemented through a partnership with NetBank because of their footprint nationally, which made it easy for informal traders to access the funds. The target for the scheme was to support about 13,300 informal traders at an estimated grant of 3,000 each as a once-off. And the budget was 40 million.
Finally, Chair, the latest status for the informal traders that were processed, their successful disbursements went to about 4,844 enterprises to the tune of 14.4 million. The bank balance was at the time 484,000, with the subtotal being now 14.97. The bank charges were 52,000, and the total reconciled amount that was spent to informal traders was 15 million. And now, what happened to the balance? Chair, we have a balance on that fund that we are targeting to provide support to the informal traders. And in the pipeline, we've got about 7,000 informal trader support program, and then the demand is about 21 million. We are, in this regard, Chair, engaging the department to see whether there's a need to continue with the informal trader program. And if we, if the department then agrees with us, we'll then have to find the budget. We needed to encourage them to have some form of formalization whether it is through a co-op scheme. There's a risk of fraud in this space because of the informality of it. A co-op enterprises, Chair, this is one area where the performance has not been good. To date, we funded about 12 co-ops to the tune of 5.4 million, and 100% of that money has been written off. As my colleague from CEDA, Mr. Mbata, stated, the challenge of the fights and co-ops collapsing, and also the nature that some of the leaders of these co-ops run these co-ops as spaza shops, actually results into the collapse and the fights that exist in almost all of them. And we said we cannot continue, Chair, members, to throw in money in these things, in these co-ops, if they are not what we call functioning. To date, we've got about two co-ops to the tune of 30 million applications that we are assessing. And we said, how do we then address the poor performance of these co-ops? One of the interventions, Chair, will continue supporting them, but we're going to strengthen the governance part of these co-ops to protect the resources of the state. We're also looking at the introduction of an aggregator model where the aggregator will provide technical support, both whether that aggregator is an agronomist, but also the space of governance to ensure the continuity of these co-ops. And also the aggregator will ensure that one, the quality of the product that these co-ops produce is up to the standard that the off-takers can actually buy. And this aggregator will also have to negotiate off-takes with the retail buyers in a particular area. We are in this space looking at working with some of the private sector players to secure the off-take agreements and work closely with these aggregators. The plan is to ensure sustainability of the co-ops as stated earlier, as the method, Chair, has been tested with the likes of Amagelo in the Eastern Cape, where they actually provide technical support and offtake for the milk producers in the region, and the CIFA will fund them to the tune of 30 million to on land to those small farmers who produce milk in the area. And that, Chair, to us, seems to be working, and we said, let us then replicate this approach to other sectors of the co-ops, because that Amagelo is properly governed, is run by the former CEO of Masizane Fund from Old Mutual, which shows us that you need some level of professionalism if you want to see this aggregator model succeeding. Quickly, moving at the Small Enterprise Manufacturing Support Program. This is since the SAMP started actual approving transactions in September 2020. Over the same period, 423 million was dispersed to 56 SMEs. The current budget available for the current financial year is around 260 million, and we are sure, Chair members, that this one will run out even before the end of quarter three, given the demand of the program. Business viability program, the number finance was about 20 of these enterprises. This one, Chair, was mainly designed to support businesses post-COVID to
get about 93 million, and a sum of 50 million has been dispersed to SMEs, and the number of jobs that were protected is about 235. The available budget to date is about 207 million. The demand for this one share is not that high because the majority of the enterprises are already indebted from some of the programs that the loan programs that we gave them during the COVID relief space. So if the performance and the demand is actually not attractive, we may just have to move this money to another program that is moving, like your small manufacturing support program. The Youth Challenge Fund, the number of SMEs here that were funded about 20, and the amount approved was 89 million. Out of the approved amount, 35.4 million has already been dispersed, and the number of job opportunities facilitated about 444. The budget that is available at this stage is 194 million, and we're already in discussions with the department to see whether we can reopen the window to attract a new set of attractive deals that may qualify for the Youth Challenge Fund, because we've received, after the closure of the window, we've received a lot of good deals that we have to redirect to the other programs of CIFA, and we felt that there is a need to reopen it and allow these good deals to come through. The TREP program, here the number of SMEs that we supported about 8,330, and the amount of approval is about 798 million, and 711.5 million has been dispersed, and the number of jobs opportunities facilitated here were about 17,291. This is one of the employment drivers at this program, Chairperson, and the budget to date that is still available is about 673 million. And we saw that by the end of the financial year, this budget would have been committed to these SMEs in this space of the TREP program. Chair, that brings me to the end of the presentation. Colin Meva to present the second presentation that speaks to the operational issues that the committee requested.
Thank you so much. You can go ahead, Mr. Meva. Oh, sorry. I said Mr.
Oh, he's a Mr. Yes.
Oh, so it's a base. Oh, I thought it.
You are connected.
Oh, okay.
Olani, unmute and join us. And load the document. If you're struggling, I can load it for you.
Maybe you should go ahead.
I think let me load it for him.
RP.
Yes, sir. Go back.
Yeah, that's the correct one.
Oh, is it visible, Chair?
I'm not sure if let me just check, because I see the date it says 31 July. So let me just check my copy.
Okay, so it's 23rd August. Let me
Because the one that you flighted says 31. I want to just check.
Kolani, is that you, Kolani, flighting that one?
I make him a co-host.
Okay. I think we must just take it down because we can't.
The one it should say is the CIFA's report on progress and challenges faced in rolling out financial support, the cover page.
Yes.
To MMEs and cooperative dated 23 August 2022.
Correct, sir. I think, let me just share from my side.
Yes, that is a correct one. Yeah. That you
okay. I think Colin has got connection challenges because you can't hear him. I'll just take it quickly.
All right.
A second presentation, Chair, that looks at members at progress and the challenges support co-ops and co-ops has requested. By the committee, recommendation, including the problems, challenges, and processing this application. To me, some there will be an overlap. Person, somebody can mute, please. The current operating environment, sir. Regional administrators are primarily responsible, Chair, for checking the applications in terms of the document completion when the applicants come in. This workload, Chair, will be reduced because we've introduced now the automated loan origination system where the applicants load the documents themselves, and the system will not allow them to conclude the application until all the relevant documents have been done. During that process, the applicant will get a reference number, Chairperson and members, that starts with ENQ, which states that it is still inquiry. Once all the relevant documents have been loaded, then the system will give them a number that starts with APP, which is an application number. That then indicates that all the documents have been fully loaded. It is then at that stage that there will be human intervention to do the due diligence. We then investment analysts who are responsible for the basic assessment now, once that information has been loaded in the system, and then it gets escalated to the investment officers who are responsible for conducting the due diligence. Then the regional managers are responsible for overseeing that this work is done throughout the village chain within the regional office. This condition precedent. Once the condition precedent is met, the funds are disbursed. This is where, Chair, usually you find the challenge that most of our clients struggle to meet the conditions precedent. Because, for example, you may say the loan is approved subject to you getting a session agreement signed by the department that is offering you the work. Then if that process drags, then it delays because we cannot as an entity disperse until all the conditions precedent have been met, including the signing of the what we call of the legal agreements. Then once the funds are dispersed, our coach investment monitoring team kicks in. The same problem that I mentioned, I will not bore the committee because the same challenges with the applications are the same as the ones that we picked up when we're doing the BRT program. And I would be boring the committee if we were to go through the same issues, because that's what we face in the majority of the time. Then the applications that don't meet or fall outside of CIFA funding criteria, we then the CIFA doesn't fund applications that do not meet or fall outside this criteria. So if, for example, no cash flow forecasts are provided so that you are able to assess whether the applicant will be able to repay the money and the business can afford paying back the loan. And also the loaner, rather the owner or the jockey, being able to display sufficient entrepreneurial skill, 100% availability to run the business, and also to experience really around running a business. The business must also fit our funding criteria of the maximum of up to 15 million. And also we are actually, due to our license with the NCR, we cannot fund entities or individuals who are under debt review or are rehabilitated insolvents, and also does not fund, we don't fund speculative property development. For example, somebody say, I want to develop a townhouse complex in this particular location with the hope that I'll find buyers. We don't fund such. Applications that were prepared by CEDA to be presented for CIFA funding, this expectation chair members that applications that are supported through the business plan formulation by CEDA through CEDA service providers will definitely get approval from CIFA. This is not always the case, as applicants or applications are often prepared by different individuals and with all the wishes and aspirations of the applicant or the jockey. But when we look at the financial viability of the application, we have to question, and usually then some will pass, some will not pass, because usually the person who prepares the business plan is working closely with the jockey, and they're looking at all the good side of the deal. For us, we need to look at the risk associated with the deal and also put the processes in place. And if it doesn't meet the criteria of its ability to generate enough cash flows to service the loan, then it usually will not pass. There is also a challenge of applicants who refuse to accept non-approval of these loans. Because we're a government entity, some of our applicants, they feel it's government money, therefore I deserve it. But we've got a challenge that we are managing taxpayers' money here. Every cent that goes out has to come back so that we are able to finance the next applicant. You know, some of them, we reject these deals because loan repayment capabilities of the business cannot be proved. Market viability cannot be proved. The business concept is not viable. And sometimes it's in over-concentrated sectors, and also outside of the CIFA funding criteria. The rejection of funding application tends to lead to an escalation of complaints outside of CIFA structures, for example, to Parliament, sometimes to the presidency, sometimes to the department. And now we're seeing some going to the public protector and also to the media. But we are able really to articulate our position, because when these loans go bad, we are the ones who must take the flag. And we need to ensure that we protect the taxpayers' money and also protect the applicants. Because when they don't perform, we have to attach some of their properties. And we don't want to really set up our business people to fail. Hence, we put these conditions in place. Implementation of unplanned emergency programs. CIFA has its internal capacity to members to these programs that were not, you know, what we call unfunded mandate, where you have this responsibility, but it does not come with capacity. At the same time, CIFA was expected to implement this COVID-19 relief program, the business recovery program, and your riots related program with the same capacity that must still deliver on the APP that must come and be presented to these committees. And it really strained really the capacity of the entity to a point some of the employees resigned and said, listen, I can't take the pressure, this is too much. If we were to be doing more work, we need to really put in place resources to do the work, because the APP is based on the capacity that we have. Any extra program now needs to be supported by capacity to ensure its delivery. And these programs were implemented without additional capacity, but we managed to deliver these programs and also deliver on our APP. The challenges, the general increase in the volume of applications and the manually processed applications and stagnant staff numbers was one of the challenges that we faced. Chair, looking quickly at the operational statistics delivered by office, for example, for the financial year 2018 up to 2022, we'll see the number of funding inquiries the regional office from the regional offices 6,000 in 2018, 8,000, and 10,000, 11,000, and 8,700. Those are the ones that came, I think, through the walkthroughs and emails. The ones that came through the call center from 2018, they increased from 7,700, 8,600. 2020, during the COVID era, with the programs that we implemented, they jumped to 21,000. 2021, they jumped further to 41,000. And in 2022, they slowed down to 32,000. This is really driven, Chair, if you look, by those programs that we were actually implementing due to COVID. And that's why we talk about the stretch in the capacity of the entity. The number of jobs that were actually generated were about 1,700, 2018, 2019, 3,100, 2020, 3,000, 2021, they jumped to 19,700, and also 2022, they stabilized back to 9,378. Also, $196 million, 2019, $73 million, 2020, $424 million, 1.2 billion, and 2022 they jumped to 1.4 billion as a result of also these interventions. The disbursements also follow the same trend. In 2018, there were 118 million, 2019, 156 million, 2020, 227 million. And these programs kicked in 2021, they jumped to 822 million. 2022, they moved further to 1.2 billion. Now look at the staff numbers. The staff numbers remain constant. 2018, there were 76 direct lending, the people were processing these interventions. 2019, there were 81, 2020, 78, 2021, 72. And we now had to increase the number to 108 by the use of fixed term contracts. This is what really strained the capacity of the entities, if members look at these numbers. Solutions to these challenges, we need to really to increase the interventions in the pre-investment funding readiness of the applicants. We need to collaborate with ecosystem partners, and we need to focus customers' outreach, establish a structured front office with senior system contract capacitating that office for quality and timeous handling of applications. We are going to continue hosting the webinars and workshops to educate our people about the funding requirements, and also rolling out technology to assist the applicants in offices where CIFA and CIDA doesn't have a presence. And we need to desperately increase the capacity of the back office to conduct due diligence and also drive post-investment, what we call work, so that we protect our investments. We've started, Chair, to implement the loan origination system. The phase one is up and running, and we now are busy driving the implementation of phase two, which is going to look at customizing the application processes for each of the products, because for applications of term loans of up to 15 million, the requirements are quite complicated. But for applications like your TRAP, your Youth Challenge Fund, and your purchase order funding that we're introducing, we need actually to introduce a simplified application process within this system. That is work, Chair, that we hope we'll be able to complete for that purpose in the second week of September. Conclusion, Chair, and way forward. To the end of the two present. giving us the opportunity. I would appreciate if the two presentations may be noted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I don't know if the DG wants to make some comments before we allow members to ask questions.
No, Chair, there are no comments from my side. We'll take
okay. The questions. All right. Can we take hands, honorable members? Or were the three presentations clear? Honorable Moimang.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start first by extending my appreciation of the three presentations led by the Minister, because it take us into confidence into areas that we visited last year as part of our site in KwaZulu-Natal. And with the feedback that we have, we appreciate progress that has been made. I have just three questions that I want to raise. I think that the first one in terms of the last presentation, particularly the slide that speaks to the challenges up to challenges six. one gets the sense that this is this areas of challenge.
The informal business in 2020 when we dealt with the process. The impact of COVID, which prompt one to ask a question, what are the lessons learned from that? Couldn't you have made a speech much more quicker when we are confronted with the July 21 riots? Because one gets a sense that the same challenges that were faced by the UAF were faced by SIPA. The second one, Chair, on CEDA, slide one under supported sector, I do not see the logistics as an area to be supported. So the question whether is it covered under mining or is it covered under supplier development program, because we realize that with the not only areas that has transporting the end product in most cases it also needs to be explored. So I just wanted to check as to whether this logistic not part of the center to be supported, like as I said, because I see that under CEDA, the slide speaks to product and services. That is an area that is a supplier development program. And then the under the slide that speaks to organizational performance, one must really appreciate the target, the outlining of the extent to which actual achievement was recorded against the NTSF targets. Most of the areas still that achievement has been done, and we are at a midterm level, which clearly illustrates that the department has overachieved. Does this reflect that in terms of our achievement, in terms of the target that we set, we under target or not? But of course, I note that in terms of jobs created, it's only that that is seen as a challenge. What is it that will be done to ensure that like other areas identified in the MTSF falling under these areas? Also, that there is a overachievement in terms of job created. I think let me end there, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maimank. Honourable Matibula.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I welcome the presentation. Mine, Chair, it goes to the minister. I don't know whether she's still here or...
The deputy minister is here.
Oh, the deputy minister. Okay, I think she can take it. Deputy minister, as you know that the challenges that the small business are facing is the marketing their products. I want to put a practical example through your permission that everybody can understand. For example, in each and every municipality and district around South Africa, SEDA and SEFA are funding small businesses. I can give you a practical example that for example, if SEDA in Guyana, they funded five small businesses that are producing eggs, for example, or vegetables such as cabbages, onion, and those things. They funded them. And then we've got the feeding scheme in schools, which are buying from outside that municipality. For example, they can go and buy in Polokwane in other areas, but we've got the small business in that area which SEDA is funded. I just wanted to check with the minister what role are they playing to make sure that those small businesses that they funded, they get market, even in, for example, like I've given the feeding scheme. They can supply cabbages and all those kind of tomatoes, those things that are being used by the feeding scheme there. So it can make it easier for them to sell their products. I don't know whether the minister will get my point, but I wanted to give him an example with the issue of a feeding scheme. Okay.
Yes. Can we please mute Honorable Matibula is still on the floor. The S Woosterweek. Yeah. Okay, you can continue, Honorable Matibula.
It cannot be Chair, that we fund small businesses, but we don't help them to sell their products. We are not making progress on that. And then as well, I will also post it to the minister as well. We have bigger markets, like, for example, Shoprite Safe, which are moving to rural areas and township. And as you know, Minister, that those big markets, they don't buy or promote local products. Like buying from a smaller farmer there, which produce tomatoes. They only go and buy to the big farmers. So also I wanted to check with you, Kuri, what form of progress are you making sure that that will request those shop right states to buy from local produce farmers. And then also to see that previously in the last week, we have visited the, we were doing oversight in the Northern Cape there. But I was not pleased how CIDA was performing in that money municipalities, because we didn't see anything regarding cooperatives there. We didn't receive any progress or what are they doing. As we have seen that the majority of people who are participating in small business in that area, they are between the age of 40 to 49. It means the youth there is lacking to participate in small businesses. I wanted to also to check with you, Guru, what progress are you making to make sure that the youth in the Northern Cape as well as women to make sure that they participate in the entrepreneurial field. And then also to see that again, I want you to tell me what progress have you put in place to assist them small business, because as you can see that most we are faced with the issues, challenges of load shedding around the country, and many small businesses
operate when electricity is on and off. So I just wanted to check with you, what method are you making to make sure that you assist those small business in those areas, especially in assisting in generators or other sort of electricity in those areas. I think it's Chair, I have, and then on the presentation as well, you have indicated that you have assisted the, you called it platform, you have assisted 2,000 women. We want to make sure that they participate in the program. So I want the total breakdown for each and every province, so that I can see that in my province in Limpopo, you have assisted 10, and those 10 are in which municipality, so that we can know the progress that we are making, because it doesn't have to say it's 2,000 and we don't know which one is where. So I would also like to get that clarity, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matevula. Honorable Jacobs.
Good greetings, Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you for the opportunity. I know I'm not in the Select Committee, but I was listening attentively, and I also just want to say a few things. First of all, to the presenters and led by our minister,
I think we must acknowledge the progress made to date and also the response to dealing with the challenges at hand. We continue to do oversight and ask challenging questions, but I think we must also acknowledge the progress made to date. From where I am, in the outreach that we're doing in the Western Cape, we've seen Minister in Khayelitsha, we've seen her in Mitchell's Plain, we've seen her crisscrossing our countries. And I think that's good that we're on the ground, and CIDA and CIFA and the department is really going outreach. And I think what Minister's doing by going on the road shows is also doing the entrepreneurial culture. Instead of waiting all the time for government to give handouts, we're saying that we want our people to own their future, to determine their own future, to be your own boss. And so we're picking it up that it's still early days. There's still lots of problems, lots of challenges. I think the big thing, Minister, and I'm sure you know about it, is the funding readiness.
You also alluded to this, that our people are eager, they work hard, they want to make business success, especially our informal traders and our youth and our women.
And that's, we must be focused on that problem. The previously disadvantaged must get a helping hand. Everybody must get a helping hand, but especially those that have been the legacies of apartheid. So I think, Minister, we're doing great work, but we also need help with getting people. So I just want to use one practical example. We were in Khayelitsha, and the wall was quite full. And so now I asked the officials from that meeting, how many have applied? And then they say maybe 200 or maybe 100 have applied. Then we ask, how many of them are funding ready that got to approval stage? Then unfortunately, the numbers are very low. So, Chair, I think the big challenge from outreach work till actually getting some help and support from the department. Now, I think the one thing is that we are glad that there's now an automated system, which is a good thing. Now, we know we can have a reference and we can, there's a bit of transparency and accountability there, which we applaud. But I think the big challenge is our people are still struggling with getting to the point where what we have on paper, on practical, is not on the application. So I think I want to just ask if we can't get an advisory support, getting them ready to be funding ready. And I know CEDA is meant to do that, but I think there's still room for improvement around that. Is there a possibility of getting young graduates, Minister, to just help our people, especially the Gogos and the aunties on the Cape Flats and everywhere, to just get their proposals in? Because our people are good business people. They literate, but they can't fill in all these forms. And formalization is a big thing. I mean, we work with the informal sector, and a lot of them are just survivalists. They make a 200 rand a day just to feed their family. And we want to get them to a stage where they can actually make a bit more money. So I think that is where we're going. But overall, keep up the good work. We will continue supporting the department. And we look forward to even greater partners. I think, Minister, we only got a small budget. I think it's only 2 billion rand. We must spend all that money. So I think we must ensure that our officials pull up their socks, ensure that we deliver. But also, more importantly, reach out to the private sector. I think our colleague from EFF also spoke about localization. We must now get the big companies to actively, not in words, but in deeds, support our local businesses. I think the food, the value chain, the agro-processing, all of these things, Minister, we must get set aside for local. We must get localization. And we must ensure that we can't just be at the crumbs. Our people just get the crumb in, and the good deals and the good opportunities is still largely in the hands of those that were privileged in the past. So let me pause there. Thank you, Chair.
And just so much, Honorable Jacobs. Honorable Ambassador Dango.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, just to follow on Honorable Jacobs, I think localization is an important issue. But how do we practically get localization in the existing municipalities and within the new demarcations for the divisions? Are we going to have localization at that particular level? And are we harmonizing, for example, the programs of CEDA and CIFA with, for example, the Gauteng Economic Development Program and the bill that just passed to take that forward? Is there harmonization between that? And is there harmonization between national, provincial, and local, importantly local, so that we can get local people participating, local large businesses becoming partners, mentoring and training of a new entrants into the market. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dango. Before the responses, I just wanted to say that perhaps in future, because the National Council of Provinces, that report should direct provinces so that we know what is the state of a small business sector in the provinces, to what extent are these challenges that are highlighted, particularly by CIFA, finding expression in the provinces. But also perhaps the question would be the there's a program called the ecosystem facilitation.
To what extent does it address these issues that are highlighted, particularly the cooperation between CEDA and CIFA to address these challenges? Because if you look at the presentation of CEDA, the kind of work that they do in terms of improving access to market, as well as all the other outcomes that all those outcomes that relate, if those and also the intervention, this challenge application should be addressed in terms of this ecosystem facilitation model. The question also to CIFA, especially with regard to the monitoring, whether there is monitoring that is done, especially with those businesses that was supported in terms of the business recovery program. If there has been a monitoring, if are they now successful after this intervention? How many have not been as successful? Have they completely collapsed even after this assistance? I don't know if you will be able to have that kind of a data as for the informal sector businesses as well, if they are able to continue to operate even after they have been assisted, that the damage has been so wide that they aren't able now to continue despite the assistance. But also, I don't know, you mentioned this issue of the capacity. Because whether you're talking the COVID pandemic, small business sector is affected. It was affected by the destruction in KZN and Gauteng. I know because I'm supposed to be actually in KZN this week from today as part of the ad hoc committee on disaster relief and recovery. But also because I have an appointment with the ICE specialist, I couldn't go. I know one of the issues that is addressed by as part of intervention is also on the floods, the impact of floods in KZN, Eastern Cape and the Northwest. So it gives an impression therefore that every time there's a disaster, small businesses will be affected. To what extent are you then planning to address one, the issue that you're raising of capacity challenges, but also the resources? For example, with regard to Indora, already there is money that is set aside for emergencies and disasters to the provinces and municipalities. If there's a problem around housing, disaster around housing, disaster in provinces, there are monies that are set aside. If you remember, the president was saying, after talking to the Minister of Finance, that there was a total of 1 billion that is made up of these emergency funds. I don't know if part of the planning, we should not be planning around having such contingency funds that will be there, because it's clear that from time to time, disasters will affect the small business sector, so that it addresses those issues that you highlighted around the issues of capacity. I think on the issue of co-ops, I think we will need to have another meeting so that we get clearly what these challenges are
but also perhaps invite the one that you, I think, would say Amad Len, so that they can also share with us the best practice in terms of how they are being successful in running the co-op in the Eastern Cape. Thank you so much. I think what we'll do, I know there were issues that were referred to the ministry, but I will also ask the managers to respond to those, and then the DM will make final comments also on the issues that would be responded to by the executive, the managers. So I will then hand over to the CEO of CEDA, followed by CEO of CIFA, the DG, and then the DM will make concluding remarks.
Thank you, Chair. I will try to respond to some politics, but also the flu of my body. But I want to, maybe the DG will cover the issues of the working together of the Department of Government and our clients, as well as private sector, as far as markets are concerned, because that's a serious policy issue, and it's a serious intervention that the department is working on. But my is that definitely there needs to be a coordinated effort in terms of making sure that the clients that produce products in local municipalities, you know, do get the opportunity to supply in those municipalities, as well as to the private sector that comes in the business space in that area. And from where I'm sitting, those should be, especially with the private sector and government, those should be non-negotiables. And as a department, I know there's work that is being done to reduce that red tape, and the DG will come in on the, I'm not delegating apart, but I want to talk about that space as the department is consolidating. But it is important that that gap is closed, so that all the clients that are funded are able to then gain access to the market. This point came up, Chair, even in various roadshows that we attended with the minister, where it was clear that the locals don't get opportunities to supply to the private sector, you know. But there was also a bigger discussion that talks to how to make sure then that even the locals get to open these opportunities, let it not be the likes of ShopRite and USave. And that is that's a big conversation that we must have, because if we want to see small, small businesses growing in the township, especially those who are in the property space and the retail space, we need to have a different plan and a different policy direction around that. We definitely we take the point on the Northern Cape, Honorable Matabula. I think was it your question? I think so. And if I'm answering correctly, I apologize. But we will definitely look into the Northern Cape in terms of the dissatisfaction. Would like to engage more and see how we can improve in that space. I think we'll in the next session, when the chair says we deal with cognitive co-ops, we need to then bring the state of cooperatives in the various provinces that we have assisted, that we have, that are still operational, so that then maybe that conversation can take place. So I will ask the also just to respond, who is responsible for the provinces, respond on the issue of what we're doing around the issues of youth as soon as I'm done in the various provinces. There was also an issue around load shedding. It's a big concern. I know that from a CEDA point of view, we are funding in the space via our technology transfer program. And we have some of the clients that we've assisted, but the budget is very limited. it's a serious concern, because the performance of these businesses, even through the loans and safer loans, really depends on continuity and sustainability. I know that Safer does provide generators now with their loans so that these clients can continue to work. But there's a case of the previously clients who were on the system already, which needs a serious budget from a grant point of view, and is something that the department we need to look at as a portfolio and see if money could be provided, because it can't be debt, because the entities are also struggling from a debt repayment point of view. So we need to make sure that those grants do come in. But from ourselves, we use the technological transfer budget to try and address those. Our clients apply and we're able to buy them that equipment, but it's very limited, the budget. We took note of the provincial breakdown in terms of the sheet rates, that information can be provided. What we have done so far on the sheet rates is that we've listed these entities, and we are currently assessing their readiness so that we can be able to put the interventions into place that they would need to get into that market. But that information is definitely available in terms of provinces. We have explored the idea of using graduates, especially on the KZN flood disaster that you are running, a CEDA, we have, we did employ over 50 graduates in the different spaces, to in different municipalities, to try and assist the applicants to fill in the forms. And then we've seen that that works better for us in terms of us trying to expand, because we all have limited skills. So we've been using that method, and I think it works well. It worked well in KZN and in this and Cape. We will look at making sure that that is expanded. Obviously, we need to make sure that the budget is clear for that, but it has worked for the KZN funds relief intervention that we are running as CEDA. There was also a comment, Chair, that you made, I think, around the ecosystem participation model, which obviously is linked to the district development model that we have as a country. It links back to the first question that was raised by Honorable Matebula regarding how do we get all the stakeholders to participate and to be in one space, so that we know who is doing what and what opportunities are there for the SMMEs. See, there is doing a lot of work around that currently in terms of bringing, we've profiled the partners. We're working on value propositions for different partners in different spaces. That is coupled with, that should be coupled with the system that will bring all these partners together. So there is work that has been done. It's been an early age, probably about 30 to 40%, but we are moving with speed in terms of that, so that by this time next year, we would have a working a model in terms of making sure that all partners, from the DFIs to private sector to government, have a place to meet, and we're clear what is it that you're looking for on behalf of the SME. I think probably I would leave it there, Chair, in terms of what I needed to come in on, and maybe the next CEO can come in, Mr. Machamba, through your permission, Chair, if there's anything.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Machamba.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Minister and Deputy Minister, including the honourable members. I think a number of questions, really, my colleague, Mr. Mbatha, has covered them, except to just say briefly on the issue of the lessons learned from the UIF COVID intervention. Yes, it's correct, honourable member. We experienced exactly the same problems as our colleagues in the UIF. And also, we were also implementing the COVID relief program. So those lessons we took forward when we were dealing with the, what we call the violence affected, particularly informal businesses that were affected by the violence. Hence, we said the only way
that we can prove the authenticity of an informal trader is by at least getting a police affidavit. And then obviously the South African ID. That is and also the support from the association that they belong to, and if they are also having a permit from the municipality. That is how far really you could, because remember, these numbers are going to be audited. You need to be able to try to tell the AG that this is the process that we followed to satisfy ourselves that yes, indeed, this informal trader was a trader at the time. So we did took those lessons forward. And also, what is important, Chair, is what I said in my first presentation, that what is critical, we need to find a way and speed up the process of formalizing these informal businesses without really criminalizing them when they don't have a trading permit. I think we need to find a way to formalize them, because it will really assist us as government, particularly the public entities that are dispersing taxpayers' money, to be able to be really judicious in how we actually disperse these monies. The issue of generators, you know, it's one thing to have a generator. I'm sure we've heard about the billions that Eskom spends when they use generators in diesel. Diesel is very expensive for a business, and it's really not sustainable for our SMEs. We do buy the generators, but you can see that the cost of diesel is actually squeezing. I think to me, we need a bigger intervention, particularly the program that was announced by government, where we provide an energy support mechanism that is subsidized for businesses. For example, if they were to have a solar system that is backed by batteries and also access to gas, because most of the businesses, they use gas to cook, but the refrigerators, they do need electricity. And one of the traders was telling me that if electricity goes and my ice cream melts, it's gone. You can't refreeze ice cream. That's it. You know? So we need those broader interventions that are sustainable. To me, I think a combination of solar with batteries and access to gas would be much more affordable and sustainable for SMEs. But the energy department or the treasury may have to come in there to subsidize, because they come quite expensive, those interventions. The localization element from Honorable Dango, we have this program, Chair, that we're rolling out, which is one of the most popular ones, the Small Manufacturing Support Program, which really drives that element of localization. And it's one of those that really the department has funded it. And every time we run out of funds and go back to the department, we do get the support that we need, because it's quite a popular one. And I'm happy because it speaks really to that issue of manufacturing, which drives and informs localization practically. And that's a space within which we play. But coming to the issue of providing market access for the SMEs, this model that we want to introduce of an aggregator, as I mentioned, Chairperson and Honorable Members, the key issue there is for the aggregator, whether they are an economist or an agronomist, to provide the technical support on how to run these farms. One. Two, to provide governance structures to ensure that these co-ops are run like businesses, not like Masingawane type of thing. And thirdly, to negotiate with the retail off takers in these areas where they operate, to provide offtakes to these entities. Because really, for anybody, even if you want to think about exporting, you first need to test and prove your product in your domestic market. And to us, that relationship with the retailers and other off-takers is critical for the SMEs' sustainability. The issue, I think, Kosan Mbata spoke about the issue of the geographic spread of our interventions. I think it's something that we can provide to the committee, because we do report it quarterly to the portfolio committee of DFPD. Then the monitoring of businesses that were supported, Chair. As I said in my presentation, the moratorium that were given to these businesses were ranged between 6 and 12 months. And the majority of those now are coming to an end. And we are beginning now to start engaging with these enterprises, the formal ones in the main, to see, and to us, numbers don't lie, even though people may use numbers to lie. those numbers will tell us the real story as we start reviewing the performance of these entities going forward, because the issue is going to be their ability to service the debt. The moment they hit a snag, having your debit orders being cancelled or bouncing, then you know that there's a red flag. So we're going to start seeing the true picture now. With the informal traders, Chair, we as we said, we want to re-engage the associations and also look at a way that we will still have to discuss internally with the department, whether you can have a form of support of a co-op rather for these informal traders, so that you don't just rely on the association to provide the support that you need or that they need, actually, these informal traders. So it's an intervention, Chair, that we're going to be taking forward to see how we improve and also stop criminalizing informal traders and provide the support that they need. And also hoping that the municipalities will come on board with the issue of the permit. Where I stand, I just can't conceptualize, Chair, and wrap it around my head. Why would somebody who can only afford to buy stock for 500 rand to trade fruit in the street corner, and the municipality comes and asks for this person to pay between 1,500 and 6,500 trading permit? It just really baffles me. It's one of the interventions that really, I think, if we're serious about the support of SMEs at a local government level, it's an issue that we need to revisit, because that will also assist us in formalizing the informal traders. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the members, Minister and Deputy Minister.
DJ?
Thank you, Chair. My colleagues have covered me mostly, but I'll just touch on a few things. The issue that was on my table, on the issue of lack of local procurement. I think this is an issue that as government, we have to address seriously. We have, as a department, for example, identified 1,000 products that are mostly procured by government, which can be procured from small businesses. And we are taking that issue forward, because we are saying, if as government we cannot show confidence in small businesses, we should not really expect others to buy in into the process of buying from small businesses. We do have a good program that we are running with the private sector. I must indicate that the uptake also is not easy. Some retailers, they do support small businesses, even though they come up with these requirements in terms of standards, of which you understand, you need to make sure that you supply a product that is safe for consumption or utilization by the public that buys the product. So we do have CIFA coming in assisting in terms of the procuring of riding and the to treat small businesses. And then on the other hand, CIDA assists with the issues around the standards to make sure that the products that are produced by small businesses are safe. So we do have a program, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done that we are still doing. Minister yesterday had, for example, an engagement with Minister Motsekga from the Department of Basic Education, because we are looking at the opportunities that are coming through Department of Basic Education and how we can make sure that we do get our SMEs really benefiting from the budget that is availed by the Department of Basic Education to under construction, repairs, maintenance, and all these other things. But also the school nutrition program is one of the critical levers. We are also engaging with Department of Social Development around that because we want to make sure that they take advantage of the people that we've already supported to provide these food parcels and all these other things. Also, the issue of buying locally, it's a big issue, Chair, because once you get products listed by the retailers, they also need to be bought by the customers. So that's another element or phase that we also embarking on. We do have an MOU with Proudly South Africa, because remember, they do support products that are produced locally. So some products are listed in their platform, but also they market the products that are produced by local SMEs in all the other platforms. Even during the conference that they normally hold annually, we make sure that we participate and make sure that our SMEs do get an opportunity to showcase their products. Honorable Jacobs did touch on the
important issue of funding readiness. I think we are working on this. That's why, Chair, we don't outright reject applications now. CIFA, if applications are not meeting certain requirements, they are referred to CIDA, so CIDA can assist them to be ready for funding. So it's something that we have to continue to do, to continue to train SMMEs around ensuring that they are able to submit good applications, because it assists us as well with the turnaround times, and they also don't lose opportunities that they are trying to take advantage of. I think, Chair, you did touch on the issue of co-ops. I agree with the CEOs. We might need to have a separate session. DM is leading that work. We have started engagements. We've started preparing or even engaging with the structures. Unfortunately, Chair, there's too much politics in the co-ops movement in general. The focus mainly becomes about the power, the structures around the what they call tertiary cooperatives. The others, they just interested in ensuring that they are the presidents of that structure, but there is not much focus, because these tertiary and secondary cooperatives, they are supposed to support this primary cooperative. It's something that we are systematically trying to address, so that we can have at least strong primary cooperatives, because if you have strong primary cooperatives, these are the people who are doing the actual business. These are the people who are supposed on their own to form secondary cooperatives, and then secondary cooperatives on their own, once they feel that there is a need to form a tertiary cooperative, they do that. But what is happening in the country now is that you have people who call themselves tertiary cooperatives, and then they go and recruit people to be under them, and they go around saying they are representing them, which is the other way around. It shouldn't be like that. This should be organic, start with a strong primary cooperative movement. But we are taking a serious note in terms of the inputs and the comments that have been made by the honorable members. Just one last thing, Chair. On the issue of responding to disasters, I think you are correct. We have to be always ready. As a department, I must indicate to you, Chair, that we do get criticism from the other sectors. Especially, we did have an engagement, a bilateral with Treasury, where they were informing us that they are not pleased with the fact that we always come back to them and ask for adjustments in terms of our budget. But we do tell them that we have to be responsive, because when we had challenges around COVID, we went to them, we said, let's redirect funding so that we can respond to this. Again, with the riots, we did the same thing, and now again we went because of the floods, in case that we cannot just sit as a department and say, apply. We do have existing instruments. If those instruments are not responsive to the disaster situations, they are not going to be taken up by small business. So we'll continue to do our work as a department to be responsive to the needs of small businesses and cooperatives. Chair, let me end there. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, DG. At this stage, we'll head over now to the DM for concluding remarks.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to you and the members. I also want to greet the Minister, the DG, and the CEOs. Indeed, the meeting, Chair, is a very important process where we indeed, even on the points that have been made here, we take them, we learn from them, and work to improve our work as a department. And indeed, Chairperson, we emphasize on the important areas which the questions that have been raised were touching on them. And as a department and the ministry, we are indeed collectively taking responsibilities and moving forward to ensure that our government reaches the people who are supposed to get the benefits of the department through services that we provide. I really thank you, and wishing the best of the day. I know work is still out there. We've got to all work, Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable DM, for the concluding remarks. Let me take this opportunity to thank all the honorable members for attendance and participation, and also Honorable Fayez from the Portfolio Committee for his attendance and participation. Thank you very much to the Minister, though she's not well. I took the thought that it would be putting pressure on her to ask her to make a closing remark. So I had to ask the DM to do so on behalf of the ministry. Thank you very much. Let me also just indicate that we would expect that in future we receive the presentation on time. Because on the platform here, we have the researchers and the content advisor who help to do analysis of the presentation and summarize the presentation for members. But because we received the presentation late, they could not do so. So we would like to request that in future when because we submit our committee programs on time to indicate which department will be meeting or which entity will be meeting on time. So we would like to make that request that because it affects the participation and of the members. I struggle myself to go through the reports yesterday to go to my PCO at the CMC meeting there, and I had little time to go through the presentation. So I want to make that request, DJ in particular, to ensure that when we submit the program of the committee, we receive the documents on time, particularly these issues that we're dealing with here. Were issues that we're supposed to have dealt with, I think if I'm not mistaken, in May or June. We had to shift that date to accommodate the department for its annual performance plan that was tabled sometime in May. So we will really request that in future we receive the presentation on time to allow our researchers to do the analysis, and also members to have enough time to go through the documents so that they also prepare their questions. Honorable members, we're coming to the end of the meeting. We will defer the minutes to the next meeting, but also want to indicate that the next week, according to the NCOP program, there will be a plenary session that will be starting at 10 in the morning. Therefore, it will affect the committee because we normally meet on Tuesday in the morning at 10. But then there will be ministerial briefing on the 30th next week, Tuesday. The challenge with this, it's a matter that I think our honorable whips should raise in the WIPARI and also in the programming committee meeting, because now we as NCOP we are attending the plenary sessions in person. Now if those briefings the ministerial briefing and half past 3 in the afternoon, it's going to be difficult then for members to conduct meetings in buses back to the villages. Something that I think the whips should be did that. I think Honorable Dango, our whip, has logged out because he had indicated that he has to rush to the plenary session that is taking place this afternoon. So we noticed that on Tuesday now, something that happened and we complained about it. It stopped, but it looks like it's happening again now. For the next 2 weeks, there will be plenary sessions that are taking place in the morning, affecting the committee meeting. So as such, for next week, we suggest that we have our committee meeting on Wednesday, Wednesday afternoon, because there's no plenary next Wednesday. We'll be meeting with the Department of Employment and Labor in the afternoon, starting at 2, because on Tuesday it's going to be very difficult. But because there's no plenary on Wednesday, and then we can connect first with the meeting that is chaired by Honorable Moimang in the morning at 10, and then we have a break between 1 and 2, and then we can have we can have the committee meeting on select committee on trade in the afternoon. I've just been reminded by the committee secretary that we have also been approached by the Minister of Trade that we should have in the morning at 9 on Tuesday in the morning before the ministerial briefing. It's going to be a meeting for 1 hour about the triple BEE commissioner. So that meeting will start at 9, and we'll then log out at 10 to join the ministerial briefing on Tuesday the 30th. With that, thank you very much, honorable members, minister, deputy minister, DG, chairpersons of the entities, the CEO, and the staff of parliament and staff of committee. Everybody, thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much. Oh, John Bawa.
Ah, good night, sir.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go and see.
Oh,
okay. Oh,